Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. Hey guys, you've heard me say many times that when we stepped into the call of foster care and adoption, we felt ill-prepared, and I didn't understand dysregulation or the effects of trauma, but the Lord was so kind to coach us along the way. He was so patient. And so we want to spend some time talking about that today, proven tools and some activities that we can incorporate into everyday living to help our children attach and thrive in our families. Now, on our last podcast, Savannah and Robbie Alderman shared how the Lord asked them to join him on the journey of international adoption, to completely trust him to build their family in his timing and in his way. Now, I hope you'll take some time to listen to that conversation. It was great. They shared so much with us and gave us a keen insight on what it looks like to navigate adoption in today's really difficult world. I don't know if you know, but Savannah is an occupational therapist, and she was doing that before she welcomed these three little girls home from Taiwan. And I've asked her to join us again today to share some tips and ideas that she's used along the way. So Savannah Alderman, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell us, I know that you went to Union University, got your degree, tell us why you went into occupational therapy at such a young age.
So I actually discovered about occupational therapy because of my passion both for missions and adoption. Mm. So it goes way back in the day. When I was a freshman in high school, we were required to do a paper on a career. And so I was talking to different people, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew that I loved working with kids. I loved, traveling and missions. And so I was trying to figure out a career that kind of combined all of that. And then, ended up meeting an occupational therapist who just told me about the work she did and how she, you know, takes it internationally to mission trips, but then also is able to use it in so many different environments here in the States. And so I quickly read up on it, fell in love with it. And so I have been pursuing that since I was 14 years old, which is crazy to think about now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And you know, Savannah, you help families with behaviors and sensory issues and that sort of thing. Is that right?
Yeah. So occupational therapy, kind of the umbrella term, is we help anyone, kids, adults, geriatrics, with the occupations of life. And so for kids, their main occupations are play, school, social relationships, eating, toileting. So within that umbrella of all occupations, a lot of times comes behaviors, regulation, and learning those coping tools to thrive in those environments.
Well, I think one of the most liberating truths for foster families, parents, adoptive parents, all parents, is that our child is not their behavior. Wouldn't you agree?
And absolutely.
Yeah, behavior is just a symptom of something going on. This is how I explain it, just deep in their little soul. There's some kind of need there not being met.
Yes. And I even think as an adult, you know, we have emotions and outbursts, and we show them through crying, or I'm upset, so I'm going to go exercise, or I need a break, so I'm going to go take a walk. And as adults, we have the cognition to do that. But as kids, they don't have the cognition, the ability to do that yet. And so those emotions that we as adults feel, as a kid, they're letting it out through that behavior.
Yeah, so that's right. They just don't have the context to bring to us and say, hey, I'm really struggling. I got, you know, I was hurt at school today. Somebody hurt my feelings.
Yes.
That's why I'm doing this, you know, and they just don't have that. And so here's what I want our families to understand is like what dysregulation can look like in children. Like, can you, what are some things you can share with us that maybe some behaviors kids can do, or some things you've seen that were really, you know, that kids were just dysregulated?
Yes. I think one of the coolest things about being an OT is that you get to understand that every child is so unique. And so the interesting thing is every child's dysregulation does look a little bit different. But I think some common signs of dysregulation are if they're moving a lot, or if they're wiggling, or you can tell that they're a little bit fidgety. We always say with kids, if they're quick to have an emotional response for something that does not seem like a big problem, if they're having trouble navigating very simple problems. So if I'm asking my daughter to go upstairs and grab her toothbrush and that takes her a long time, it's cluing me in that there's something else going on that's causing her to be a little dysregulated outside of her norm. But I do think it depends on the kid. And so I think that's something that as parents, you know, kind of monitoring, what does the normal state of my child look like? You know, what is them in their happy emotional zone? What is a time when they're a little bit more hyper and excited? Is that an age-appropriate response, or does that seem a little off-putting for the situation that they're in? And all those little signs can help us figure out if that's dysregulation or if that's just something else that we need to address separately.
Okay, so say I have, this is super common, especially for kids in the foster system, that mainly yes. what I work in now. So say I have a child with food issues, like they only eat three things all day, right?
Yes.
How can you help with that? Like, give us some things. You've posted some great things about this, but how can we, you know, how can we get some help with that? Or what's some things we can incorporate at home to kind of slowly, I know it takes a lot of patience, but to slowly kind of broaden their world with food?
Yes. I mean, I think the biggest thing for food in general, and I love feeding therapy. It's such a fun thing to see kids learn to enjoy food, because I think especially in this day, mental health is such a big thing that I think we're now more emotionally aware of. But food is such a controlling thing for kids. And so if you think about a kid, so much or so little of their life they're able to control, but food they are able to control. Mm-hmm. And so I always encourage families, you know, if you have a kid that's really controlling a food, try to just help them release that control. And so the number one thing I always say is make food fun. So if a kid is not able to even explore that food, help them by learning to play with it. You know, it's such a thing that we say not to play with your food, but that's how kids learn. They learn through play. And so we'll even say with kids that we'll, you know, when they come in and we're hanging out about food, we may make a pizza funny face out of pepperonis and cheese and sausage. And these foods, they may be nowhere near ready to eat, but simply by playing with it, they're exploring and they're learning about that food. I always encourage families too to not make different meals for each person in their family. We see that very common.
Oh, listen, that is that's a struggle. It really is.
Yes, yes. And so we always say, you know, if you have a child that is a picky or problem eater, maybe they only eat one food of that meal, but try to incorporate that into the family's meal. So if they only eat mac and cheese, then make chicken and green beans and rice and fruit, but then have that mac and cheese be one of the sides. It just allows the kid to be a part of the mealtime, for it not to be split between family members. And then two, have them explore the foods. Even if they refuse to eat green beans, put two on their plate and just allow them to keep it there. We want to encourage kids to eat what they feel comfortable with. And so if we are putting green beans on their plate and say, you can't get up until you eat every single green bean, they're immediately feeling a lack of control there.
Yeah, the bar, that bar's too high. Yep.
Yes, yes. And so if, you know, my daughter one day, she's not a green bean eater. She'll eat every other vegetable but won't eat green beans. And so every time I tell her, I'm going to put two on your plate. If you don't want to eat them, that's fine. They're just there. And one day I walk over to the table and she's like, Mom, where did my green beans go? And I was like, I don't know. Where did they go? And she was like, oh, they're in my belly now.
Oh, that's great. And it took you a while to get to that point.
Yes. And just that patience and her learning that she was in control.
Yeah.
And for her, it became a game. She wanted to show me that she could do it. And they're still not her favorite. But she has the ability to eat them if she wants to, because she doesn't feel like it's the food's controlling her.
Yeah. And what families need to understand, had you made her sit there and eat green beans, that is a power struggle that we just don't want to get into.
Yes. And I always say, you know, it's okay that kids are picky eaters. We always say, as long as kids have between 5 and 10 foods in every category, that is a pretty typical picky eater. If kids start to eat 5 or less foods in each category, that's where we kind of venture into the problem feeder, where we want to really address that and really use these tips and tools so that we aren't dealing with eating disorders as they get older, or we're not dealing with mental health issues with food. And so we always say the younger the kid is that we can get them to love and explore food, just the better they're going to be off as they get older.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. Well, I know a child's sensory processing can be lacking or oversensitive due to early trauma or time in the NICU. I know kids that had a feeding tube when they were little, you know, all that, just really drug or alcohol exposure in the womb, that's very common. This can cause very difficult behaviors at home, but at school. And, sometimes as parents we're like, okay, I'll handle it at home, but if it's school, they can just bring their A game, right?
Yes.
How can we minister to that? How can we help a little one when they're just struggling with sensory issues at school?
Yes. I always say the biggest thing with sensory processing, I always say that the two biggest regulators, I think, are food and sleep. And so if we have a child that is a pickier eater or is not getting enough nutrients in the day, or they are not great sleepers, or, you know, they stayed up late watching a movie, or had a play date and so they didn't get the normal nap they normally do, we can see that dysregulation comes so much quicker. So I always say movement is the game, and the key to sensory processing is helping kids get adequate movement to help their body feel most in control. Mm. So the best way I like to do that is movement in their daily activities. And so if I can tell my youngest, who is my wiggle worm, she is a mover. She's the one that does flips on the soccer field. She is my kid that craves that sensory movement more than other kids her age. And so for her, if I can tell she's extra wiggly, we will be doing frog jumps all the way to the kitchen table and then frog jumps all the way to the bathroom to brush her teeth and finding those little ways to make movement. So that's an easy thing you can do in the classroom, you know, having the teacher help implement those movement pieces, whether it's using a TheraBand on the chair to help them sit still or allow that kid to take a movement break if needed. I think it's such a beautiful thing to see because it's becoming so much more understood in the world of sensory processing. Mm-hmm. And so teachers, I think, are so much more willing to implement those processes in the classroom because they know that if I'm helping this kid stay regulated, they're not only going to have better behavior, but they're going to learn more. And then they're going to make my job a whole lot easier. And so we always say, if we as the therapist can come alongside the parents, who come alongside the school to implement those in every environment, how much better regulated are our kids going to be to thrive in those environments?
Right. Absolutely. And if we have a child that struggling with sensory processing or has had unhealthy touch or just, you know, is sensitive to proprioceptive or, you know, just hasn't been developed and they're standing in the line to get a drink of water or waiting their turn to do something, somebody accidentally bumps them. You know, it can be a big dramatic event, right? And so working on those things, I remember one little boy looked at me one time. I was working with his parents, and he said, if they just let me wiggle by my desk, I could do my spelling words.
Yes.
And it's so true. You know, it just takes a lot of grace and a lot of patience, but it's just that sensory processing can be lagging behind a little bit or highly oversensitive. And so we just want to be so careful there to get the help. But you said in the first time that you were on the podcast that, you know, being a mom and using OT as an OT, because you were an OT first, then a mom, proved kind of challenging for you. And so for families who don't have access to a personal occupational therapy office, or what are some things you've had success with? That because you found it challenging as well to do at home, and you're a professional, you do this for a living. What's some things that they can try at home? The green bean example was so incredibly helpful. What are some other things we could do?
Yeah, so my absolute favorite trick in my belt is the redo method. So, I encourage all my families to do this, whether it's a 3-year-old or a 10-year-old. But instead of, you know, we say that immediate punishment or consequences are necessary at times, but they're really not helping teach anything. Mm. So if we're trying to teach, and I say, you know, my kids right now are 9, 7, and 5, and I keep telling my husband, like, our job right now, we are part parents and part coaches. Our job right now is to coach and to teach and to help them learn so that when they are preteens and teenagers, we're not having to use these tools again. You know, we're going to face total other things that will come up, but we're coaching right now. And so with my youngest especially, we do all the redo. So if she does something, if she's impulsive or if she, you know, we say, baby, come over here, and she doesn't come over here, we immediately say, hey, let's try that again. I want you to do it the right way. And so say if she's running down the street and she's not supposed to be, I'll have her come back to the beginning with me. We'll walk like I asked her to walk, and then I praise her for doing it the right way. That redo, basically, it helps train kids what is expected rather than what's not expected.
Mm-hmm.
So doing that redo with anything, you know, if I say, hey, go grab your pajamas and come back and I'll help you. And she goes and she starts playing with her baby doll. You know, that's not following the directions the first time. So I'll have her come back to where I asked her to stand. I say, hey, I asked you to go get your PJs. Let's try that again. And then once she does it the right way, celebrating the win that she had.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. The other day, one of my girls did something a little unexpected. And my oldest daughter said, hey, sister, I think you should try that again. And it made me laugh. But I was like, they're learning something. They're learning, uh-huh. you know, what is expected versus what's not expected. And I think those two words are really powerful too, the expected and the unexpected. I teach all my kids starting at age 3, expected and unexpected, because I think for kids that have these behaviors or have sensory processing challenges, it's really easy for them to think in their head the word bad, like I'm a bad kid or I'm not good at this. And I think that can be so crippling for our kiddos.
Mm.
And so instead of learning those good and bad, we say, was that expected or unexpected? Because screaming and jumping is expected on the playground, but it's unexpected in the classroom. And helping kids learn that these behaviors are expected and unexpected in different environments just helps equip them with that knowledge of, I can do this and I have the ability to do it and I'm not a bad kid. I can do what's expected.
Oh, that is a great word. I have never heard it explained that way before, but I love that because you don't want kids to always be chill. Sometimes you need them to bring their high energy, right? And so you've got expected and unexpected behaviors. That is great. And so the girls have really bought into this.
Yes. And it is funny when you hear kids start to use their own terminology on each other and their friends. Or, you know, we talk a lot about big problems and little problems. You know, was that a little problem that we need to handle by ourselves? Or is that a big problem that you need a mommy to help with? And it just seeing them use their, the other day they called up my husband and they were like, Daddy, is that a big problem or a little problem?
I love it.
And, you know, I think those things are so true as adults. You know, there's times where the behaviors we do are unexpected in some environments and we have big reactions to little problems.
Yep.
And so if we can teach our kids these tools when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, they're not having to navigate these as 30 and 40 year olds. I mean, how much better equipped will we be if we're learning these tools at an early age?
That is so true. So true. And life throws you curves, right? And so
yes. It
really helps you navigate those things. What are some, did you have, I'm sure when the girls first came home, maybe there were some, well, you had jet lag. I always feel like kids handle that so much better than adults. It's been my experience, but they handle the jet lag better. But when you had sleeping problems or
yes. Things
like that, were there some calming strategies that you and Rob found that worked in your home?
Yes. I mean, I think the biggest thing was finding a routine pretty quickly. I think kids, you know, just as adults, they thrive on routine. And we actually put our kids in school 5 weeks after they came home. And
yeah.
we had some people that thought we were crazy, but
they
immediately found that routine and they found, you know, they were adapting to the language and meeting friends. And immediately they established that semblance of what a routine looked like in our house. I think we also used a lot of visuals for everything. So I put pictures on all their toy boxes. We used pictures at mealtimes so that they felt like they had some communication with us. And I think for kids, whether it's a different language or kids that are nonverbal, having that visual helped them feel calm because it gave them understanding of what we were talking about. We use that for everything. I mean, we still have pictures on all their toy boxes of where things go. And now I use it to help them clean up. But at the time, it was to help them learn what the toy is and what it's used for. And then sleep. I mean, I could talk about sleep all day. I feel like sleep is a huge thing, especially with our kiddos that come from trauma. I mean, you think of all the trauma that may be building up over the day, and at nighttime when we're finally starting to kind of de-escalate from the day, that's when we see a lot of that trauma come out. And so for my girls, that was definitely the stickiest part for them was sleep. And so we had to just learn to be patient with ourselves. I mean, I slept in their room for 2 full months and my husband kept being like, am I always going to sleep by myself? But I think we learned whatever would help them be calm. So for them, they could get through the day fine. But at night, if I wasn't in there, they went into panic mode and they thought that they were going to be left again. You know, they've experienced abandonment.
Right.
So if I wasn't there in their heads, they thought that was going to happen again.
And that's a great point too. So they're they're in a, it's not that they won't, it's that they can't. Like,
yes.
They couldn't calm down and go to sleep because they had fear.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't a bad behavior. It was deep-seated fear. You know, it was their abandonment issue. That's such a great point.
I think, too, when you're seeing a kid that is dysregulated, trying to figure out what it is that's causing that dysregulation. And if it's, you know, if you know that every time you go into Target and your child's going to want that toy, then maybe for that season you learn that Target pickup is a really great option. And we always say that we don't want to ever change everything to adjust to our kids. But if we can cancel out some stuff to help our kids build the resilience and the ability to do those things, then maybe we can try to walk into Target, grab one thing and then leave. And then the next time, walk into Target, get our two things and leave. And, you know, building up that resilience in our kids can make a huge difference. But if we know that those triggers are happening, as parents, it's our job to help reduce those triggers, to help them learn and help their little brains thrive and function well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Savannah, this has been so incredibly helpful. Thanks for those tips. That is great. And it's been, I guess, just such a game changer for you, teaching them and then doing them, right? When the girls came home.
Yes. Yes. And I think I had to learn, too, a lot of patience, because with my clients during the day, I feel like I have all the patience in the world. But when it came to my own kids, I was like, there are only so many times in a day I can do a redo before I get really tired of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so learning that those tools do work, but it does take patience. And I'm, you know, I don't get it right every time. And I think as parents, we need to have the grace and give ourselves the grace that we're not going to do it perfect every time. And that's okay.
Savannah, if someone wants to follow you on Instagram or something, because you're always posting great ideas, where can they find you?
Yes. Yeah, so I am Savs, S-A-V-S Alderman. On Instagram, and I always try to share different things, whether it's, you know, feeding tips,
yep.
or
mm-hmm.
Information on trauma or information on development. You know, development is such a big part of OT, and I think if parents are equipped with the knowledge of what's expected from their child, they can better serve and better help their child grow to meet those needs that haven't been met.
Oh, listen, understanding is key. You are right, because I remember just being baffled by behaviors and then realizing, oh, okay, this makes sense now, right? And it just arms you with such compassion to be able to step
yes.
into it and walk alongside our little ones, our teens, and help them walk through that.
Yes. And there, I mean, the great thing now with sensory processing, there are so many different books out there mm-hmm. that are such good information. There's one called The Out of Sync Child that
yes,
I love.
Yes, I'd love that book,
and
yeah.
And it's just so good at teaching parents that some of these things that they're seeing are typical for kids, and the things that aren't typical, we have the ability as parents to help them get through that. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's just really empowering for parents to learn that even if they are not a professional and even if they don't know what they're doing, simply being a parent, you have the skills you need to help your child get through this.
Oh, that's such a great word. And I appreciate you sharing those resources. And I love the things you post. And I just want others to be able to appreciate that as well. Because a lot of us, you know, a lot of families maybe live remotely, can't get to an OT office. And
yes.
so there's a lot of online tools and a lot of great helps out there.
Yes. I think that's one thing that's been so fun to see in this field is I think it's more well known that trauma-informed care within all different practices is so much more well known than it used to be. And
yes.
so, you know, there's resources everywhere. It's the internet, whether it's books, whether it's podcasts. I mean, I think we have the ability to find resources to help our kids. I think that's just such a gift that we didn't even have 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Savannah, thank you for sharing today. Thanks for sharing your family story. And we'd love to have you back sometime. Go hug those girls. And we're just super grateful for you.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. I always feel like talking about OT and adoption
yes.
and our story is just a joy. And so thank you so much. It was definitely a bright spot to my day.
Hey, families, if you're seeing some behaviors you don't understand or you're navigating a difficult season, take a few days and jot down these behaviors, when they occur, what's going on. It's helped me tremendously. Become an investigator for your child and try to figure out what's going on when this happened or what was the environment like your child was in when they began to feel uncomfortable or become dysregulated. It'll help you understand a lot and get to the bottom of things. And remember, your child is not their behavior. The behavior is a symptom of something they are lacking or needing or something that's troubling them. And you know, what I do is I pray for wisdom, then I dig and advocate and search for my precious ones. And then I just try to find the best tools I can. And I hope that today's recording will be a helpful tool for you. And then, you know, just continue to ask the Lord for direction to help you put those tools to work. It's a journey, I get it, and I'm so grateful to be on it with you. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey. Hey friends, can you believe it's almost time to head back to school? On August the 7th, you and your church can join hundreds of Southern Baptists in celebrating Sin Relief's Backpack Day. Now, our goal is for kids in need all across the country to feel seen and loved as they enter a new school year. By packing a backpack full of brand new supplies and other necessities, you can help a child feel equipped and prepared to go back to school this fall carrying their brand new backpack. For more information and to get involved, visit sinrelief.org.